You are now listening to the Calcio Corner podcast with your host, Raffaele.
What's good? This is indeed the Calcio Corner podcast, where we cover all corners of Italian football and more. My name is Raffaele. I thank you for taking the time to listen to this, the 48th episode of the Calcio Corner podcast. Please be sure to subscribe on iTunes, Spotify, Audioboom, just about anywhere you can get your podcasts. Be sure to give me a follow on Twitter. My account is at ItalianoCalcio. Check the link in my Twitter bio. That link will give you all the different links you can use to listen and support my podcast. We will start off this 48th episode of the podcast by talking about Italy in the Euro and their upcoming knockout round game against Austria on Saturday. They will be playing at 3 p.m. Eastern time, at least 3 p.m. Eastern time here in New York, where I am based. And there's certainly some questions leading up to that game that, you know, we'll see what ultimately Mancini decides to do with his lineup. And I'll address some of those, up on this podcast. But just a few thoughts on Austria. Credit to them for getting out and finishing second in their group. But when you look at the group they were in, they were with Netherlands, North Macedonia, and Ukraine. Obviously Netherlands were the best team in that group, and they showed that by taking all 9 points and by beating all their opponents, including obviously Austria 2-0. North Macedonia weren't really much of a threat, and Austria beat them 1-0. If you recall, that was the game Pandev scored and kind of caused some pandemonium in that first knockout game. It was good to see Pandev score, but Austria handled North Macedonia as you would expect them to. They handled, you know, a struggling Ukraine team, and they lost to the best team in their group 2-0 in Netherlands, like I said. So nothing, in my opinion, really scares me from this Austria team. Of course, we all know their best player is David Alaba, who has been applying his trade with Bayern Munich, and he already has signed on to join Real Madrid this summer. But generally speaking, it's not a difficult draw for us. You know, that's sometimes the perks of when you win your group, as we did. Although you could win your group and you know, a bigger team, a bigger country could falter a bit in their group stage and squeak out as that second team, and you could be the unfortunate one to draw with them. Obviously, you know, you look at that group of death, right? Group F with Portugal and Germany and France. One of those teams is going to finish second, and some group winner is going to be the poor sucker who has to meet up with one of those three teams, which is really unfortunate for them. But again, Italy handled their business, getting all 9 points. Last time I put out an episode of this podcast, it was before their game against Wales, so I really didn't share my thoughts on that. But, you know, we looked outstanding in that game. I know we rotated a lot of players, which some people, some reaction I gauged on Twitter, people weren't super happy about all the rotation before the game started. People thought it was maybe too much rotation, too many changes, and they were kind of nervous what kind of performance Italy would put on against Wales. And those first few minutes of that game, even more like first 15, maybe 20 minutes, certainly we weren't looking as sharp as we did in the previous two games, but that's to be understood, right? With all these changes, you have a lot of players that have never played together other than just, you know, training, which you can't simulate a real game in training as much as you would love to and as you try to when you do these training games. It's not the same, certainly. And Wales are a very formidable opponent. They certainly have solid talent on that roster, including, you know, Aaron Ramsey, who we're all familiar with Juventus. Gareth Bale is the big star. So there's certainly talent on that Wales team. And it was, I was a little nervous watching those first 15, 20 minutes when we were struggling, as I said, to really get into any fluid play in anything. It's not that Wales were creating a lot of chances on us, but we just weren't looking very consistent. And then Mancini very quickly identified that he needed to switch Chiesa and Bernardeschi. He flipped their play on the, you know, flipped one to the right side and the other to the left side of the field. And kind of once Mancini made that change, flipping those two players, it certainly opened things up. Chiesa became more threatening. Bernardeschi was able to kind of tuck in more, which allowed Emerson, who was playing on that left side, to get forward more, which we certainly know that's, you know, one of his fortes. That's his style of play as a left wing back, someone who likes to bomb forward and really get involved offensively and cross the ball in. So that flip by Mancini certainly flipped the game and created a more threatening look for Italy. But seeing the team struggle in those first 15 minutes or so against Wales, like I said, it kind of in the end, because we ended up winning, I was okay with it. It was good to see those players struggle. You know, they had a fight through. It wasn't like they were just clicking and everything was, you know, sunflowers and roses and everything. It certainly tested those players a bit. A lot of inexperienced guys, guys like Pessina, who was the goal scorer for Italy. You know, this was his first big action on a grand stage like this in a big tournament. So to see him do that, Bernadeschi, he's never played for Italy in a big tournament. Certainly he's not a young player. He has experience in Serie A. He's played in big games for Juve, but certainly this is a whole nother level representing your national team, your country, on a big stage like the Euro. So seeing him do that, Chiesa, this was his first run out as well in a major tournament. So seeing those players, I think, go through that rough 15 minutes and be able to fight through, it was a positive in my opinion. I think Mancini would agree with that. And defensively, playing Bastoni in defense, playing Toloi in defense, switching kind of to more of a three-man back, Bonucci, Bastoni, and Toloi. It didn't matter who we plugged in defensively. We're, you know, that part of our game, that DNA that Italy have, being this tough defensive team, even though we are a much more progressive team under Mancini, we're a much more attacking team. We're a team that likes to hold possession and create chances, which is obviously much more enjoyable to watch than some of those old Italy teams. But what's important is we still have that DNA of being a strong defensive team, regardless of who's in defense. We're well over 1,000 minutes without conceding a goal, which is just remarkable. But it was a great win against Wales. 30-game unbeaten streak now, which ties a record. So great job by Mancini with all the work he's done. And I know I've kind of drifted away from what I was saying about Austria before, which is our opponent on Saturday. But nothing that I saw from Austria in their three group games, and I watched their games. I've been pretty much trying to consume as much of these Euro games as I could once I get home from work and everything and on the weekends. But Austria doesn't instill fear in me. I think this Italy team has proven that. Again, I recognize I'm coming with a very biased view, but I mean, find the team that's played so far their three group games. I know there's a few teams at the time of me recording this that haven't played all three group games, but even those teams that are left, like France, Germany, Portugal, they still have their third game to play. No matter how great they look in those games, I don't think that you're going to convince me that they've been as good as Italy. So for me, Italy, along with Belgium, Netherlands have looked very good. Those have been the three best teams in this tournament so far. And really, no one who came out of this group, I mean, Netherlands certainly would have been a tricky opponent had we drawn them if they ended up finishing second somehow, but no one coming out of this group was really going to instill fear in me. So I think, not that you want to be conceited or take anything for granted, because anything can happen in a 90-minute game, single elimination, knockout round, but Italy should definitely advance past Austria, right? It would be a failure, as great as, you know, Mancini has done with this team, the turnaround, the 30-game win streak, as I mentioned, dominating the three group games, scoring 7 goals, conceding none. It's been remarkable, but that's all kind of going to be forgotten. And this good feeling around the national team is certainly going to simmer down a bit and get knocked down a peg if we lose to Austria. So I fully expect Italy to beat Austria. And as I kind of mentioned at the beginning of this podcast, there's certainly a few questions with Italy's possible lineup, what Mancini's going to, you know, who he's going to pencil in for that starting 11. You know, had Verratti been healthy at the start of the tournament, he certainly would have been a starter. We all know that. Locatelli would have been on the bench. And Locatelli has made the most of those first two games that he got to start in. He was given the rest. It was the right move by Mancini to let Verratti go out there and play. And the fact that he was able to go start to finish with that knee and not just be out there and play, he played well. He was arguably Italy's best player in that game against Wales. So that's one of the questions Mancini's going to have to decide. Do you ride Locatelli, who's had an outstanding two games in the group stage against Turkey and against Switzerland, where he scored those two goals? Or do you play Verratti, the player that you know is the more talented player, the player that you know would have been your starter had he been healthy at the start of this tournament? He put in a great game. Do you play him along with Barella and Jorginho, or are you going to start Locatelli? That's certainly perhaps the biggest question Mancini is going to have to answer. And I'll say this, if Mancini wants to start Verratti over Locatelli, I have no problem with that. I think Mancini certainly has built up the goodwill that he should have the trust of all of us Azzurri fans that he's going to make the right decision. And, you know, we shouldn't really be second guessing him or questioning him. He's the genius. He's the coach. He's the guy in charge. He's better in tune with what his players are doing in training and whatnot. And I said on the last episode of this podcast, not to make it sound like I'm a fraud, I did say I would stick with Locatelli and, you know, ride the hot player. Now, this was, of course, before Verratti put in that great performance against Wales. And I still stand by that. I would probably personally stick with Locatelli. And I know that may sound crazy because we all know how special Verratti is. He's, you know, arguably the most talented midfield player we have. But if he wants to start Verratti and God forbid we lose this game against Austria, I'm not going to kill Mancini for that decision. If Verratti is, you know, identified as maybe one of the weak points and one of the reasons why we lose the game, I wouldn't criticize Mancini. Again, as I said, he's built up that goodwill. So no matter who he pencils into that midfield, Locatelli, Verratti, he'll have my full support. But I would personally stick with Locatelli. I'm willing to ride that hot hand. But again, no issue if he goes with Verratti. The other question, what is he going to do with that defense? Chiellini was a bit banged up. We all remember he had to leave that Switzerland game in the first half with an injury. I haven't heard or read anything about it being super serious. And you would think he'll start with Bonucci and Chiellini if Chiellini's good to go against Austria. But if you watch that game against Wales, you saw just how great Bastoni is. And to us Serie A fans, it's no surprise to us, right? We've seen how much he's grown these two seasons at Inter. Under Antonio Conte, he's hands down the future of our defense. Eventually Chiellini, Bonucci, they will step aside as they are getting, you know, closer and closer to 40 than they are to the age of 30. So they're certainly, their days are behind them in terms of the national team. This could be perhaps their last major tournament. Maybe they could still be a part of the World Cup squad next year. We'll see. But Bastoni is very much the future of our defense, and he's just a special talent. Now, I'm not trying to say I think he'll be at a Nesta, Maldini, a Baresi, a Cannavaro level, but Bastoni has he has all the makeup. He has the talent. He has the skill set. He has the mentality, I believe, as well, and the drive that one day, 10, 15 years from now, we will mention him when we talk about the top Italian defenders of all time. I think Bastoni's name could be mentioned with them. That doesn't mean I'm going to rank him right there with Nesta and with Cannavaro and these guys, but he'll be mentioned, you know, maybe on that 1A level, 1B, excuse me, level. He may not be the top echelon, but I think Bastoni has everything he needs to put himself in that category to be mentioned among the best defenders. Not that he will be the best Italian defender ever, but he certainly has what it takes to be mentioned among them. So we'll see if Mancini wants to run Bastoni out there with Bonucci. That partnership looked great. They did a great job. As I said, they played more of a three-man back line. We'll see if they opt for that. It'll be interesting to see if Di Lorenzo gets another run out over Emerson. Emerson really, in my opinion, didn't have anything of a great game against Wales. Didn't have a bad game, but didn't do anything to really stand out. I thought Di Lorenzo in the start against Switzerland certainly put in a better performance. So there are some questions going into this Austria game in terms of what Mancini's going to do. I think number one, as I said, is who starts Verratti or Locatelli, and what does he start? Who does he start with our defense? I think everything else is a given. Donnarumma's going to obviously start in goal. Barella, Jorginho, they'll start in midfield. Again, who they start along with, that's a question. Our attack will certainly be Immobile, Insigne, and Berardi. Although Chiesa played a good game against Wales and certainly proved that he could be a reliable option. And, you know, if for some reason he wanted to start him, he's proved that he is worthy of starting. But Berardi has been outstanding in those two games. He certainly gets my nod. So I think everything else with our starting lineup, is a given. It's that third midfield player and what Mancini decides to do with the defense. But I think a lot of that is going to be predicated on the overall health of Chiellini. So that game, again, is coming up on Saturday. I fully expect us to win that game. Then certainly, you know, as we progress to the next round of the knockout round within the Euro, things certainly get more difficult. But I think Austria will be a solid test. But I expect us to be able to put in a performance like we did against Switzerland, like we did against Turkey, control possession, create a lot of chances, not really, you know, make Donnarumma have to work hard. That's the type of game I'm expecting against Austria. I'm sure all Azzurri fans are with me and hoping that that's the case, because it would be certainly great to progress to the next round and test ourselves against what we would expect to be a much tougher opponent. All right, now on to buy or sell it to cover some of the storylines and rumors that have been dominating the Italian media and the world of football. We'll start with number one, buy or sell it. Inter are making a bad move by signing Calhanoglu. I'm going to sell this one. So this move just became official today on Tuesday, June 22nd, as I'm recording this podcast. Inter signing Calhanoglu, who was a free agent, who ended up leaving, obviously, Milan, joining their rivals, Inter. Now, is he this supreme talent? No. We all know that he's not a supreme talent. He's not one of those real elite talents in the game of football, the world of football. But he is a good player who is at times capable of putting in a special performance. Very much so. So I don't think it's a bad signing for Inter, and for a number of reasons. One, you know, who knows what, if any, they'll get from Christian Eriksen this upcoming season. I would venture to say they're not going to get much or perhaps nothing at all from him. Of course, Eriksen's first and only priority is his health and his well-being for him and his family. And if that means missing the entire season, then that's certainly the right thing. I wouldn't at all, if I'm Inter, expect to have Eriksen back at this point for any point in the season coming up. But we'll see. But obviously that uncertainty creates a void on Inter's roster. And they obviously identify Çalhanoğlu as the right guy to perhaps replace him. And it's kind of funny how Eriksen, when he, you know, first kind of came over from Tottenham 2 seasons ago in that January market, he kind of, you know, he barely saw the field. He was kind of used more as like a late, you know, get 10 minutes towards the end of the game as a substitute by Conte. And as last season kind of progressed, he became a much more critical player, much more crucial player, an impactful player for them, scoring some critical goals, creating some chances. And now the fact that he's going to be out, you know, it creates a big loss for Inter. And when you consider the financial situation the club is in, right, that they're not going to be able to go out there and sign a big-time player, that brings me to my second reason why I like Çalhanoğlu, because he isn't costing Inter a lot of money in terms of a transfer fee, because obviously, you know, he's being signed on a free transfer. His contract expired with Milan. And as I said, given the importance of where this club is financially and their inability to spend big this summer, you know, having a player of Çalhanoğlu's caliber, as I said, he's not a supreme talent, but he is a very good player. And being able to get him on a free transfer, not having to pay that transfer fee, is certainly significant and very beneficial to Inter. Now, obviously, again, free transfer doesn't mean free. You got to pay him his salary, and he's going to get a big salary. I've read 4.5 to 5 million it could go up to over the course of this 3-year deal that he signs with Inter, and that's net. So essentially almost like double his when you consider the gross of the salary, when you look at the taxes and the way it works in Italy. So he's certainly expensive in terms of salary, but the fact that you could get a player of his elk, of his caliber on a free transfer, not paying that transfer fee, is a huge plus for Inter, given where they are financially right now, looking to sell players like Hakimi, who seems to be on his way out and heading towards PSG. So I really do like the signing for Inter. I think, again, is he at Eriksen's level in terms of his talent? No. But at any moment or any game, he's capable of rising to that level. It's just the inconsistency with his play. That's what is holding him back from being one of those elite players. And at his age, I don't know that he'll necessarily become that consistent player, but with that talent around him at Inter, with the likes of Lukaku, Lautaro Martinez, Barella, and all the talent that they have there that he'll play along with, perhaps, you know, it helps Çalhanoğlu to raise his level a bit, raises his talent and his performances to that level that Inter kind of played at last season. You know, there's certainly going to be some pressure on him, right? He's now, you know, he's going to be loved by the Inter fans in the city of Milan, but those Milan fans are going to hate him for leaving them and going to Inter, but it's a good move by Inter. They filled that void of Eriksen, so we'll have to see, you know, if Çalhanoğlu could rise up and play at that level that they're going to hope he could. So I definitely sell this in terms of it being a bad move, but I love this move for Inter. Moving on to number two, buy or sell it, Vincenzo Italiano is the right coach for Fiorentina. I'm going to buy this one. So we all know about the ugly mess I talked about on the podcast, my last episode of the podcast, with them moving on and parting ways with Gattuso before essentially that tenure even started, right? Just 3 weeks into hiring Gattuso, there was Mercato disagreements and stuff which caused them to part ways. And I said how Gattuso, for me, was the number one choice for Fiorentina. He was the perfect fit. I felt that he was capable of elevating that team from being a team that has to battle off relegation these past two seasons to a team next year that could have competed perhaps for a Europa League spot. That's how much of an improvement I felt they could have made under a coach like Gattuso. Now, parting ways with him leaves you with perhaps picking up the scraps in terms of what coaches are left now that a bunch of coaches have been hired and whatnot. But it sounds like they're going to try to get Vincenzo Italiano, who it was originally announced that he was staying on at Spezia, the great job he did there. They're working out a deal to get him out of his contract there and bring him in. And I do think, Fiorentina will take that big step under Italiano that I would have thought with Gattuso? No, but I do think Italiano is a great hire for this club. Again, considering what coaches were left, going out and getting him to leave Spezia, this is a great hire by Fiorentina. I think even for Italiano in his career, this is a nice progression up, a nice jump going from Spezia to a club like Fiorentina, who by all means, I mean, they're a big club. Obviously, we know they're not at the level of a Juve, an Inter, Milan, all that, Roma, Lazio, whatever. But they're a very good club. They have a very passionate fan base, a big fan base in Florence. They had their glory days in the past. But there's nothing to say that this team can't get back to being one of those bigger clubs in Serie A under Comiso. And I think Italiano's a great coach. I like this jump that he's making. I felt he would have been a great hire for Sassuolo. I would have looked at that jump on level playing field with Fiorentina. We know he was linked to Napoli during this past season. I felt that might have been too big of a jump for Italiano, going from Spezia to Napoli, given the difference in terms of pressure and expectations. So I love this move for Fiorentina. I think it's a nice save by the organization after parting ways with Gattuso to bring him in. And also for Italiano, I think this is the perfect jump. As I said, I think if he had gone to a club like Napoli, that would have been too big of a jump. He would have been in over his head, and it really could have maybe messed him up a bit psychologically with whatnot and all that. And I think just going to Fiorentina, it's the perfect move for him, and it's a good save by La Viola after that debacle with Gattuso. All right, number three, buy or sell it. Manuel Locatelli would be a good signing for Juventus. Definitely have to buy this one. I don't see how anyone could view Locatelli potentially joining Juve as a bad move. Now, you know, there was talks about, you know, them Sassuolo asking for 35, maybe 40 million for Locatelli, which I think there were some people that thought that might have been a little bit of a high price tag. But after his strong performances in the Euro, I think Sassuolo are a bit more justifiable in asking for 40 million. Perhaps they might even ask for a little bit more. They could get other clubs involved, perhaps abroad, to help drive that price up or generate more interest in him. But I still think Juve are the favorites to land Locatelli. They are the team most desperate to sign him because they certainly need talent in that midfield. He would be a great addition for them. We all remember when he was kind of early in his career starting out with Milan, there was a lot of high expectations on him. I don't think at that time he was ready to handle what expectations were put on him at Milan, given the talent level of that organization at the time. They certainly were in their dark days. We're not talking about the same Milan that we have today. So he went to Sassuolo. He really developed his craft a bit more. He became more confident player. And now I do think he's ready to make that jump. And he's proven that, as I said, on this big stage at the Euro. And Juventus need a lot of help in their midfield. I know they have talent there with Bentancur, Weston McKinney, Artur. There's certainly talent there, but they need an upgrade in that midfield. They need more depth up there and a player with Locatelli's skill set. He seems to be Allegri's top choice, and you want to give Allegri the right weapons to try to get this team back to winning a Scudetto and have them being more competitive in the Champions League. So Locatelli would definitely be a great signing for Juve. So we'll see if that deal gets done and what the price tag would be. I'm reading, you know, Juventus are looking to try to include some players to help lower that cost in terms of how much cash they'd have to give up. We'll see if Sassuolo were okay with doing that, or do they want mostly cash. I'm sure they would prefer to get, obviously, as much cash as possible in this deal for Locatelli, but it's definitely is a much-needed move by Juve. I think there is almost, to some extent, a bit of desperation for them to try to sign Locatelli because they really need an upgrade there. You know, offensively, assuming Cristiano Ronaldo's back, Morata, Dybala, Kulusevski, Chiesa, you have the weapons offensively in your attack. Certainly you could add another defender, and we know that they're looking to bolster their defense a bit, especially if Demiral leaves, which I've read reports he could leave. But the glaring weakness, the biggest need that Juventus need to address this offseason, in my opinion, is their midfield, and Locatelli would be a great addition if they're able to pull that move off. So that will do it for the 48th episode of the Calcio Corner podcast. I hope you have enjoyed it. Once again, please be sure to subscribe on iTunes, Spotify, and Audioboom. Feel free to leave a rating and comment. That would be greatly appreciated to help us grow our content. And until next time, guys, ciao.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Calcio Corner podcast with your host, Raffaele. If you've enjoyed this episode, please rate, review, and subscribe on your preferred podcast listening platform. We really appreciate that effort. Until next time.